Welcome to the New York Times podcast. I'm mad as hell because Spirit delayed my flight of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I got black, I got white, what you want? Hop outside a ghost and hop up in a fan on. I know I'm about to blow, oh, ain't done. They try to take my floor, I take their for ransom. I know that I'm gone. They see me blowing up, now they say they want some. I got two twin vibes, turn you to a dancer. I see two twin eyes, leaving on a band on. I got two thick thighs, wanna link the gang. I got red, I got blue, what you want? The Chanel, Balenciaga, Louis Vuitton. She know I got the Fendi Prada when I hit. From the bottom, you can see the west.
You're listening to Ransom. That's Lil Tecca and Lil Tecca's braces. And I have a question. My question is Lil Tecca's Ransom the 13th most popular song in the country or the 23rd most popular song in the country?
Or the 9th most popular song in the country?
According to
Apple Music?
I've never heard of that.
Spotify, I think it's like 7.
I've also never heard of that. Here's my thing. We are in a renaissance, a bounty of the chart era, and yet we are also arriving in a moment where charting lacks meaning. And I have been scratching my head for months trying to figure out what the utility of a chart is in the current musical ecosystem that moves quickly, has a lot of contingencies, and which can also be incredibly segmented. Things that happen in one corner of the universe are not adequately noticed in other corners and therefore not well tracked, which is, of course, always been a case, but is perhaps more pointed right now. So we're going to talk this week on podcast about charts. We're going to talk about Rolling Stone's new chart and trying to compete with Billboard. We're going to talk about merch bundles. We're going to talk about whether charts are independent. We're going to talk about people who only care if they're number one on SoundCloud, et cetera, et cetera. Sitting across from me, the guru, it's Ben Cesario, pop music industry reporter of the New York Times.
Hi.
Is that not the title?
Sure.
You can be whatever you want to be on podcasts. It's great. To my right, it's Joe Coscarelli, pop music reporter.
Amateur chart expert. Semi-professional.
Here's chart the thing. Expert. Ben is our official chart expert.
Yeah.
You are perhaps the most, at this table, the most prolific occasional tweeter of chart minutia. You are a one man at chart data.
Yes.
But only
Hip Hop by the Numbers is actually me.
But only in specifics, or like, it's not every week, but it's just like, just a detour briefly. There's this thing you do on Twitter where I sense that you see a thing that's ballooning and it's uncomfortable and it's kind of like starting to eat up a lot of oxygen. And I know you're just sitting at your desk honing your pin.
Getting ready to pop a bubble.
Yeah, just like very, just like not even like a pop. More like a
a dart.
Until it's just deflated and empty.
I like chart facts that speak to a narrative.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, it's narrative AF. Absolutely. All right, so let's start by talking about the Rolling Stone chart launch.
Oft-delayed, yes. Rolling Stone.
Yes, I had launch. To actually double-check to see that it had, in fact, launched, and it has, in fact, launched. Ben, what, as Joe said, it's been off-delayed. Why does this exist? We'll get to whether it's needed later, but why does it exist?
I think it exists because Rolling Stone has a new owner. It's Penske Media, which is run by Jay Penske.
Penske boys.
He also owns Variety, and he seems pretty aggressive about trying to position these publications and getting into sort of a trade publication, sort of a consumer publication. He wants to be in there. I don't really know what his, you know, master plan is, but he also bought, or at least invested in, a chart data company that's called Alpha Data. And that it used to be
FKA
BuzzAngle. So BuzzAngle, when it launched a few years ago, was trying to challenge Billboard and Nielsen, which worked together on their charts. And its reputation was pretty good. BuzzAngle's reputation was it was fast. You know, the people at the record company were getting reports faster with BuzzAngle than they were getting them on Nielsen. Mm-hmm. There's also minutiae about how the data is weighted that goes back quite a ways to basically like retail stores. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but if you can imagine that there are some kinds of stores, like, say, indie record stores, where Nielsen assumes they're not getting 100% of the data, so they might weight it a little more. Penske bought, he bought Rolling Stone, he bought this data company, and he wanted to launch this chart. I think he sees a value in the chart as a sort of reader draw and maybe something to shore up some of the industry reporting at those publications. Mm-hmm.
And I think generally there's this feeling that because of the wealth of data out there and Billboard having sort of held the defining role for so long, that they're maybe a little bit vulnerable to a challenger now because people want to know what the definitive order of things is. And that's, I think, something we'll get at later. But you can look at Apple, you can look at Spotify, you can look at SoundCloud. Everybody has their own order, and whatever the king maker is going to be could potentially be up for grabs, though I'm not sure that it is.
So, Ben, you're saying the data is different, or the algorithm is essentially different that BuzzAngle's working with.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Right.
I think the sources are basically the same. I mean, especially now that it's dominated by seven or eight online services and just a handful of big, you know, like Amazon selling lots of CDs and vinyl. So there aren't as many stores, as many sort of sources of the data. So I assume they're not competing that much on who's getting what accounts.
It's just the weighting.
It's the weighting, and I think the accuracy and the speed of it all and the crunchability of all that data. Nielsen, in some ways, is kind of the gold standard of, like, audience measurement and TV and radio, too. That's what they bring to the music measurement. They're authoritative. They have a deep history with this stuff. And it's not totally true that Billboard hasn't been challenged. There have been challenges over the years. Mm-hmm. About 10 years ago, there was the company Big Champagne that was known for tracking, like, online file sharing.
Yeah. Right.
They launched their own. And the idea was, like, we're going to track everything that Billboard is ignoring. We're going to look at, like, Last.fm and MySpace and all that kind of stuff, which at the time kind of did represent the cutting edge.
Yeah,
right?
And you kind of wonder how the charts of, like, the early 2010s would have been different if all of those things were factored into the actual Billboard charts. I mean, the one thing you can say about Billboard and Nielsen is maybe they're authoritative, but they're a little slow to pick up on how things change and seem to adjust for the changes following what I would imagine are industry pressures to properly account. Like, if the record labels say, well, actually a significant amount of our revenue is coming from these places, that should be somehow reflected. These popularities should be reflected in the charts as well.
Yeah, or the existence of a challenger like BuzzAngle, which was starting to do that stuff, and so Billboard reacted.
Right, and then you see, I think what they've done, what the Billboard charts have done over the years is subsume those criticisms. Maybe not early, but quick enough to remain the primary.
They're a little slow. They're, like, deliberately kind of conservative.
Right.
I think that, you know, the people that run those charts, and there's a lot of them, there's, like, dozens and dozens of charts. You know, they want to be very sure that they have all their ducks lined up. I think the industry push and pull on that is very intense.
As you know, we'll get to it with the merch bundles.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, I just think, like, the people that run the charts for Billboard, they're considering this stuff, you know, seriously and reacting to a lot of
shout out Silvio.
Incoming. Yeah.
Our biannual shout out
to Silvio.
Silvio, come on the pod. Yeah. Silvio, come on the goddamn pod.
And when you say dozens of charts, you mean, you know, not only the sort of flagship Billboard 200, which is the album chart, or the Hot 100 singles chart, but then all the genre charts,
all the genre charts, all these other ones, like the social chart. They recently launched, or it said they were going to launch, a global chart.
Right.
I think basically it's just the album chart and the single chart are the only ones that matter. Really matter in general.
Right. Although, obviously, like what is an album chart really? What is the value of an album chart in the year 2019?
When it's mostly measuring song plays.
Yeah. So there's that, and also, or it's measuring merchandise purchasing. And I'm curious, and I think hopefully at the end we'll talk about this, like what an ideal kind of chart circumstance would look like. But one of the things that the Alpha Data Rolling Stone charts do is my understanding is they update much more frequently. Obviously, Billboard charts come out once a week. It's sort of this definitive, this is what's happened in the last 7 days, this is the new position. These things are updating hourly.
To be honest, I haven't like studied them closely enough to know. I know that it is a weekly chart. And so officially, you know, the data.
There is a date.
There is a date. But that at least what Buzz Angle used to do is that you could see it sort of building throughout the week. Yeah. And that you could see by like Monday morning what the weekend was like. And
like,
you know, Buzz Angle, yeah,
like,
and
yeah, like movie box office.
Like Buzz Angle had these sort of like graphs and charts that they would include about showing like the decay curve, and that, you know, if something was kind of behind the curve on Monday morning, it really needed to catch up in a big way by the end of the week. And so, you know, it was already at a disadvantage. So stuff like that, I think that's why it's useful to the industry to sort of see like, how did we do on Saturday morning? Is important to know on Monday morning.
But that presumes that charts only exist to serve the industry. But sure. Also, increasingly, charts are sort of fan service. And this is something, Joe, I know that you kind of observe and are excited about. Increasingly, you see fans really, really take a level of personal investment and kind of almost unhealthy obsession with so-and-so is number one or so-and-so beats
beyond
something else.
I mean, it's like, it's probably the most weaponized thing among stan communities is like, she flopped or like, you know.
Or why are you not giving enough credit to our success?
Right, that too. But it's basically pop music is sports now. Sports is all data. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these nerds talking about the analytics, and then you look over in a space that you would think of as much more sort of character and narrative driven, and now because of the wealth of data available, you're getting that side of things too. You're getting Selena Gomez is better than Demi Lovato because XYZ single did ABC on this Spotify chart, or, you know, you think, I always think of someone like Nicki Minaj. There's no artist.
Wait, just pause there. I just wanted that to soak in for everybody. Okay, cool. You can go in.
There's no artist who cares as much about her obscure charting as Nicki Minaj.
Like, right, like, if, you know, some terrible single was like number one in New Zealand.
Saudi Arabia, iTunes download chart where you then download a Snow Patrol song after. Like, you know, just like the most.
She's killing it.
She will never fail to point out some new chart position in some sphere I've never even heard of.
But like, which of course underscores the uselessness of it.
But which also rallies the fans.
Yes, but so it's useful in a fan service. But like, I feel like I noticed this really start to happen with the iTunes pre-order charts and iTunes day of release charts, because you'd start getting these emails from publicists like, oh, so and so is
number one on
the
iTunes
on chart. iTunes, and they were number one from like 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. or something, and I'm like, this doesn't actually measure anything.
They're doing pre-saves. This is the new thing, right? Where if an album is coming out in a couple weeks, the Apple Music or Spotify page already exists.
iTunes, RIP.
RIP,
RIP iTunes.
And if
never
you click,
updating.
If you click like save for later, so it will populate when it comes out, they're now counting that, and publicists love it. I don't know.
It's never been clear, even in like the iTunes days, like what the chart really was, whether it was recognizing sales, whether searches or other kinds of things.
Oh,
were
that's
going to that.
It never occurred to me it would be a search chart. I always assumed it was a sales chart. You don't think?
Or I don't
you
know.
Just don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think they clarified. Maybe some listener out there knows something that I don't. But it was always mysterious what that chart really was saying.
Huh.
You know what all the charts are saying? Old Town Road.
Yes.
Number one.
Let's listen to Old Town Road. Mason Ramsey verse.
Is there a chart where Old Town Road is not number one? I don't think so.
Wherever the country chart?
Wherever Nicki Minaj is number one, Old Town Road is not number one. Hold up, let me tell you.
Can't tell me nothing. Hop up in my razor, got 1,000 acres. Right up on the couch with a spray that it don't faze her. I-oh, yippee-yo-ki-yay. If you ain't got no giddy up, then giddy out my way. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road.
So, yes, Old Town Road. To me, if you're going to have 5 or 10 or 20 different charts or chart methodologies, I would hope that one of the benefits of having multiple chart methodologies is you have multiple perspectives on what's happening in pop music. And yet, that is not really what's in play. Now, look, we may be in an unusual cultural moment where there is, in fact, one song that does
dominant song.
That could be the case. But you would think that there would be somehow more daylight between the charts.
What's the number one song in your heart right now, John?
Pop Smoke.
Okay.
Yeah, like obviously.
But do you dispute that Old Town Road is a phenomenon and that it's...
I don't know, man. I don't listen to any place that plays Old Town Road.
Any place
that any whatever. Plays Old Town Road. When was the last time you like just heard...
Outside.
Like just in the
air.
Yeah,
just in the... It's
just in there.
Yeah, I think you don't spend enough time around...
Outside.
Like, yeah, that's true. Around humans.
I'm an inside kid. I'm an indoor kid. That's true. Yeah, I understand the power of Old Town Road, but I would also hope that multiple chart mythologies would like maybe find ways, especially because Old Town Road is like clearly gaming the charts. Maybe that's worth talking about.
Sure. How are they gaming the charts, John?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Obviously, part of the thing with Billboard is that remixes of the song, of the same song, are counted towards the same line item. And I'm not saying that the Young Thug Mason Ramsey version is so radically different from the Billy Ray Alone version or so radically different from the original, but it does seem curious that every time that the stream numbers begin to drop,
they release a new remix.
Yeah. Do you think the Peppa Pig version that he talked about is coming soon?
I'm holding out for the Dolly Parton Megan Thee Stallion.
Fire. I mean, I would not begrudge them that
at all. Well, that's the other thing. It's like Lil Nas X is sort of getting a pass for all of the gaming that he may or may not be doing because it's been so baked into the phenomenon from the beginning.
It's a game.
He's so open,
it is a game.
And he's so open about it and frankly funny about it
that
like it's fine.
How many years of Old Town Road being number one do you think we are going to be subjected to?
Well, so we're approaching what would be the record-breaking 17th week.
It's been 16 weeks at number one, so it's tied for the all-time record with Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men, Despacito. So if it's number one next week, it'll be the longest-running number one song ever on the Billboard Hot 100, which goes to, I believe, the late 50s.
Is it also number one on Spotify and Apple Music? I was actually just about to check.
No, it's currently not even in the top 10 on Apple Music.
That's
in
more
the,
revealing
in the US.
To me. That's more revealing to
in
me.
The US. So
what's above it?
I mean, this is pretty hilarious. The first two songs are Drake songs.
Money in the Grave.
The first number one on Apple Music, top 100 USA, No Guidance, Chris Brown featuring Drake, a.k.a. Drake featuring Chris Brown.
A.k.a. like, let us not speak of this song at all.
Number two, Money in the Grave featuring Rick Ross. Number three, Baby, Lil Baby and DaBaby. Number four, Post Malone, Lizzo.
Truth Hurts.
This, I mean, just
good story.
I just want to pause to talk about Truth Hurts for a second.
Should we play Truth Hurts?
Let's play a little bit.
Let's
and then
play
I'll
Truth
do
Hurts.
10 seconds on it, and we'll move on.
Yes, let's play Truth Hurts, a true chart oddball phenomenon.
Why men great so they gotta be great? Woo. I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% dead. Even when I'm crying crazy, yeah, I got boy problems. That's the human in me. Bling, bling, then I solve them. That's the goddess in me.
You could have had a bad, not committal. Help you with your career, just a little.
You're supposed to hold me down, but you're holding me back. And that's the sound of me not calling you back. Why men great till they gotta be great? Don't text me, tell it straight to my face. Best friend set me down in the salon chair.
Lizzo put out an album a couple months ago.
True story.
Didn't have a hit on it.
No.
Didn't have a hit on
it. Are you saying that objectively or critically?
I'm a reporter. I'm not a critic.
I'm a critic and I'm not a reporter, and I think we agree.
Truth Hurts, a song from 2 years ago, I believe.
I think it's from 2017.
Appeared in a Netflix rom-com.
It also was in the trailer, was it not?
And blew up. And is now the most successful Lizzo song and was tacked onto the album as a bonus track.
Oh, is that true?
Yes.
Mm.
This is amazing. I mean, it's the music industry
it's the
is so
it's the
amazing.
Fifi. It's Lizzo's Fifi.
Yes.
I have been a little surprised to see the Lizzo album creeping up the chart.
So, I mean, I think this is a good segue to talk about the album chart actually, in many cases, being a song chart.
Joe, at the end of last year, when we did our year-end package, you did these little data viz kind of like inserts, sidebars. And one of them, I believe, was talking about on the Travis album, mm-hmm. how it streamed week over week over week, mm-hmm. and how the big hit was in the first week. I don't remember. I probably have the data, 20 or 30% of total streams.
Sure.
And then by the third week, it was like 90% of total streams.
Yeah. We called this chart the Drake effect.
Right.
Because, you know, Travis Scott put out this album, Astroworld, biggest album of his career, and featuring a song called Sicko Mode, biggest hit of his career, probably, you know, driven in large part by a Drake feature. So in the first week that Astroworld came out, it was streamed nearly 350 million times. 15% of those streams were for Sicko Mode. Week two, it was 20%. Then you get to week 17, and Sicko Mode is accounting for 71% of the total streams of this whole album. Now, when they calculate how many albums are sold, they basically divide song streams by the number.
Any song that's on the album.
Any song that's on the album.
And, of course, as we mentioned with the Lizzo situation, that's a mutable concept. Right. Really, any song.
What could be song on is any, on the album?
Any song could be on any album at right. this point. Yes. So that's a mutable concept.
Yeah. So it's, you know, when you see, for instance, that I'm making these numbers up, but that Lizzo sold 50,000 albums last week, album equivalent units, what's actually happening there is
people
one song is
playing
being streamed
the
many millions of times,
yeah.
and that is being put through the Billboard formula and turned into equivalent album sales.
Which is nonsense.
But there's an argument that this is actually a more accurate and more reflective form of measuring the data, measuring listening. That,
yes.
you know, people would buy the CD and listen to one song and throw it in the closet and never listen to it again, but that charted. Streaming has revealed to us what people are actually listening to, what they're clicking on again and again and again. So,
but
even
it's
if
not
they,
the listening chart, it's the album chart, which is that's a different thing. And I think that's sort of what I'm most intrigued by is like all this listening absolutely should be captured and perhaps even should be indexed, but should it be indexed under the rubric of an album chart? That is what I don't know. And I feel like that's the thing that I think is the big head scratch when I'm looking at these album charts. And I'm like, almost none of these records are being consumed as albums.
But it's been a long time since that's been the case, since like the unbundling of the album with Napster and iTunes, and that as listeners, we can just find the song we want and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that like the album is mostly kind of useful as like an envelope, a branding exercise to sort of say like, this is just sort of who I am as an artist right now and my campaign about my tour and my look and everything else, as much as it is a body of work.
Yeah. And John, I want to suggest an alternate reality where the Billboard album chart is a reflection of number of full albums sold per week, right? So that would mean downloads.
Jason Aldean, 37 right. weeks at number one.
That's what I'm
one.
Saying. I mean, do you want the chart to look like Vampire Weekend,
no.
Jack White,
of course
Jason
not.
Aldean?
And I know that's nonsense. What I'm saying is maybe all the energy that we are devoting to the album chart is really a historical relic, and we should find a new chart.
But then the album chart is just a proxy for the album itself, that the album itself, you're saying, is an outdated
I think it
concept.
Is. I also think that most of the most relevant artists today are making work that is pushing the boundaries of what we think of as albums in terms of how they're releasing it, in terms of even the lengths. I think all these things are starting to change. And I think that framing the most important chart that everybody turns to, that being an album chart, an album consumption chart, feels way, way off.
As a counterpoint, I would say, if you look at the top 5 or 10 albums on the Billboard chart every week, with the exception of a few aberrant things that get there via ticket bundles or merch bundles, mm-hmm. which we should talk about, I think as a consumer and as a music listener, I think it's a pretty accurate representation of the most important albums in the world.
I don't disagree with that.
And to me, that's the most you can ask for out of an imperfect system in a very imperfect world.
It's also an interesting reflection of just like how we are at a moment where the very definition of an album is in flux. And like part of that is gaming all the chart rules and like putting 39 songs on the album so that, you know, every single click on every single one of those songs contributes to something. But I think it also kind of points to just like, what is it? You know, it's been this way for a while now, but I do think like streaming is really pushing that question hard of what is an album.
And it's really about the thing that I think is not adequately captured, and to be fair, it's not like it was previously adequately captured, there were just fewer data points, is attention. And I'd like to talk about merch and ticket bundles right now, but I do think, look, even though this is obvious bald-faced gaming of the system, what it does speak to is this is a reflection of the amount of attention and, by extension, money that they are willing to spend. I think it's like a quasi-okay proxy. I'm not necessarily out on it as a proxy. All of the problems with merch bundling have to do with the fact that it's imposed upon an album chart. If there were some other kind of abstract chart that was like minutes devoted, money devoted, passion, enthusiasm, I mean, these are not real things, but like conceptually, if that existed, you can merch bundle all day long. Cali could have 37 energy drink deals. It'd be no problem. Also, I did not know that the Khaled bundle was with like a basically like a Ponzi scheme company.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, okay. So Ben, you've written about merch bundling. You sent me a spreadsheet that you did for last year's number one albums.
A handmade spreadsheet.
Yes.
To aid my reporting, yes.
This is data reporting. This is what all the classes teach you. You open up Microsoft Excel, you change the column
you
sizes.
You type in Travis Scott, and then
that's
over
it.
And over
you
over
bold
again.
It, and it goes, it's lit! And then that's it. Yeah. So about half of these albums, these are the number one albums of last year.
39 albums went to number one last year.
Right.
Some of them got multiple weeks. Mm-hmm. And to the best of my ability, I tried to check which ones had some kind of bundling deal attached to them.
Let's define bundling, sure. Just basic.
So basically
also,
what it means,
just a sidebar, were you aware that Mumford & Sons' Delta reached number one last year?
Oh, yes.
I was not aware. Okay.
Bundling is basically the idea that, like, you sell people something, like, say, a concert ticket or a T-shirt, and an album comes with it.
Seems like an inconvenience, TBH.
And like the official rules say that it's not supposed to be like a free giveaway, but basically that's what it is. It means that like you buy the concert ticket to see somebody and it costs $100 and you get an email that says, congratulations, you know, click here to redeem your code. You got a copy of the album. Or when you bought the Taylor Swift T-shirt or a
which
tote
I see
bag.
Which I see you're wearing today. So
I actually bought one of her totes to kind of test the system. It was a $20 tote bag with a flower on it. And it automatically comes.
How's the album?
Yeah.
And she hasn't released it yet.
I'm way more
so
interested
it automatically
in how the tote bag
comes,
is, to be honest.
With the album, I never
Taylor's
had a
been
choice.
Having real merch problems. I'm actually like way more curious about the tote. Okay. This is not a new phenomenon. Like, this has not been invented in the last like 3 years.
Prince did it.
Right.
Madonna did it.
It's not new. It's been around.
But it has always been controversial and people have been stressed about it. So there was a time when Prince gave away a copy of his album like with a newspaper in
right.
England. I maybe have one of those sitting in my storage.
And then on his Musicology tour in 2004, he gave away copies of his CD. Mm-hmm. And that forced Billboard to actually make a chart rule when he did that. That had never been done before.
And what did they rule? What was the ruling at the time?
I think the rule was that the consumer has to sort of take an affirmative step to choose to take the album.
Right.
You can't just simply give it to them.
You can't like YouTube.
Even though that's exactly what happens with a T-shirt, where like if you buy the T-shirt, you get it counts as an album sale.
Even if you never download the album.
Even if you never download the album, even if you never listen to it, even if you didn't even want it, even if all you really wanted was the T-shirt.
Again,
it comes with
crucial.
A download. Miley Cyrus was selling condoms for $20 that came with a copy of the album.
What?
You don't have that?
What?
She took that from Hootie.
It's the merch game, you know? It's like, so one part of this is just kind of an arms war. Ever,
Hootie and the Blowfish and Eckhouse Lotto. That's it.
Well, there was also the idea when iTunes downloads, when the download store was a big thing, that artists would discount their albums to $1.99 or 99 cents or whatever, and then Billboard decided you had to spend, what, at least $3.99, I believe?
Didn't Gaga do that?
Yeah.
I think Lady Gaga was the one that sparked it. So, I mean, we're at a moment now where downloading an album and buying a CD is like the thing that no consumer wants to do. It's absolutely cratering. But the chart rules give much more weight to a so-called album than they do to a stream.
Right.
So if you're able to sort of
orient,
if you're able to sort of get 100,000 albums into somebody's pocket, that practically guarantees you a number one on the chart.
Okay. Devil's advocate, though, doesn't this also reflect pre-existing consumer behavior? Because dedicated fans were always going to want to buy the t-shirt, the mug, the pen set.
They would have bought the t-shirt and the album.
Right, but you would have had to wait to tour maybe or whatever. Now, this is a convenient way to capture all of that enthusiasm or energy and dollar value all in one transaction, especially in a moment where the actual physical cost of music is essentially zero. If you said to those people, you can buy the t-shirt and you can buy all this other stuff, but not for another week. You can only buy it on week two.
I just think it's a slippery slope.
No one's going to buy it in week one.
I think it's a slippery slope that once the idea is simply the attention economy, or that you are in some way fans are transacting, they're buying a t-shirt, they're, you know, following you on Instagram, like maybe they'd get around to buying the, you know, the condom with your face on it. Like that somehow all of those things have to count into an album chart. It seems a bit too loosey-goosey to just have, like, anything that can somehow be measured and, you know, maybe not so coincidentally, like, gamed like that counts toward the album chart.
I think the other thing we're dealing with is that companies like Billboard and now Rolling Stone have to keep up with the idea that different consumers of different genres have different behaviors. So the reason we mentioned Jason Aldean or Jack White, for instance, are that fans of, say, indie rock still buy a lot of vinyl, and that counts for more on a Billboard album chart. Or country fans, country singers sell a ton of albums at big box stores still. And these are things that give them an advantage when it comes to the Billboard chart. At the same time, you're not going to find many people these days who wouldn't argue that hip-hop is the most popular genre.
The album, as the kind of the silo in which we are put all this energy into, is clearly a flawed silo.
And this may be getting a little bit too philosophical about it, but I think the reason that all of this has to be shoehorned into the album chart is because that is the flagship thing. And they can start new charts left and right, the artist's chart, the social chart, whatever. Nobody's ever going to pay attention to them. So they take the one that people are already paying attention to and they try their best to fit all of this stuff into that existing box.
But here's the counterpoint to that. There are now so many charts that you can just sort of claim victory on some other chart. I think I got my first official press release last week where someone was touting that something was number one on the Rolling Stone chart. That was a first. Obviously, you get endless amounts of Apple Music, like debuted at number one on Apple Music, Spotify charts, like all, you get all these, SoundCloud, obviously. So what you have are people who pick and choose the data. You know, your Nicki Minaj example is right, but people do it on a much smaller scale all the time.
But I think that stuff doesn't land in the same way that having a number one Billboard song or album does.
I don't disagree. I just wonder if there's a potential methodology for Billboard to figure out that says, well, okay, well, how do we capture something slightly more abstract than just piling everything into this album box? You want to talk about the Tyler and Khaled fight for a second?
Of course.
Should we listen to something off of Igor?
Sure.
Can you name a song off of Igor?
Earthquake.
What would you like to listen to off the Tyler album?
Earthquake.
Make my earthquake, oh, make my earthquake.
So Tyler's Igor beat DJ Khaled's, was it Father of Assad? Is that the record?
Yeah.
And it was like a big contentious thing, and Khaled was super salty about it on the internet, about Tyler's weirdo music, and then Tyler did an interview with
Zane Lowe.
The homie, the big homie Zane Lowe. It was basically like, this dude had everybody in the world on his album, and I'm just like a weird kid that makes his own music.
I was really moved by that clip.
I didn't watch the clip. I only read the excerpts.
Okay. So you're the problem with news consumption.
That's
in
exactly
America.
Right. I just read the headline. I read the aggregation. I knew what was important. Also, I don't support Zane Lowe content, just generally speaking.
I saw a rip of it on Instagram.
There you go. None of us support Zane Lowe content. No, and I agree conceptually, like Tyler's achievement, even if Tyler come in number two, to be sort of in the contention at that level is,
I mean, especially
important.
This weird ass album.
Yeah, so very incredibly important. But it was just shocking to me to see them fighting over this useless thing. And Khaled was,
it was mostly Khaled that was doing this.
Yeah, Ben, you want to give us the rundown?
Like, didn't Khaled threaten a lawsuit or
it was reported by Page Six.
Yeah,
take that as you will.
I'll believe that when
it's
I see
no
it.
TMZ.
Yeah, so there's, you know, these two guys come out with albums at the same time. Their streaming numbers are almost exactly the same. And so the number one position came down pretty much entirely to the bundles. Both of them had all kinds of merch bundles. Tyler had, like, lawn signs, like campaign signs that said Voight Igor. And Khaled was selling energy drinks and supplements.
Literal madness.
Through this.
I'm sorry. I found out about this in bulk. First of all, if you are a person listening to podcasts and you purchased a case of energy drink to support DJ Khaled, you are
I feel like it's pushing the envelope.
You are the last person who should be.
I feel like it's pushing the envelope.
What are you talking about?
How much useless merch have you bought?
I buy high quality, high aesthetic value merch all the time.
You're going to wish that your museum had the Khaled energy
drink.
Fine,
someone
someday.
Get me the Khaled energy drink as a gag gift. I will give it a place of pride in my home.
Done.
Thank you. But if you are a podcast listener and you bought like three cases.
Earnestly.
Yeah, nah, you have to unfollow now. I'm sorry. I don't like to lose any listeners, but that's a no-no. So anyway, they were fighting. Khaled's mad.
Yeah, so Khaled lost. Because his energy drinks were disqualified.
It just blows my mind that any human being on the planet bought a bunch of energy drinks. Who does not work for DJ Khaled bought a bunch of energy drinks.
Well, we don't know who bought them.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know who bought them.
Like, and how many sales could have been disqualified? Like 4?
100,000.
What?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Something in that range. I don't know the precise number.
If you forget if you listen to podcasts and knew this. If you have a friend who did this, talk to them. Put your arm around them.
So this thing like kind of forced the issue. There's been a lot of controversial number ones, but this one forced the issue because Khaled was so vocal about it and because his management company, Roc Nation, also went on the record with me saying that like they think this is unfair, but also because the whole bundling thing is unfair. It's this like arms race. They feel like they have to do it. The other guy's doing it, so they got to come up with their gimmick to move more.
Not
records,
untrue. Not untrue.
Right? So their point basically being that the charts have been distorted based on this.
They are correct.
Right. I think it focused a lot of attention on it. Billboard has said, you know, we're reviewing these. We're going to make some kind of change to effectively tighten them. I actually wonder what the effect of the Rolling Stone chart is going to have on that. Because when Rolling Stone came out with their charts, they published their methodology. And it didn't seem to be very strict on the issue of bundles.
You mean that it was more forgiving?
It was more. It seemed like it was more forgiving. They didn't say precisely, but it seemed to be that if you have a bundle, they'll count it.
Do you think that we are going to arrive at a point where essentially every artist will have a bundle of a kind with an album?
I kind of feel like the market is going to dictate this. Like, it might just peter out at some point.
I think it's coincided largely with the re-rise of merch.
Absolutely.
That helps that people want to buy artists' t-shirts at this moment, and I don't think that moment is going to last forever. You tell me.
I don't know.
But how long will people want the download copy of the album tucked in their t-shirt?
At all.
People might just get sick of that.
Worth noting that both Khaled and Tyler have the same corporate parent in Sony. So really, everyone wins here.
There was a bit made of that, but I feel like we're in an age of like gigantism and consolidation, and it's like almost every week
it's either
two or three Universal albums going up against each other or Sony albums or whatever. So
also like the arbitrariness of like what week you choose to release. I mean, like I'm sure either of those albums released a week earlier or a week later could have been number one.
Well, that's like, an unspoken thing in this whole conversation is that labels take turns picking
Absolutely.
When an album will come out so it can achieve number one. And I think part of the frustration here stems from the fact that Khaled probably thought he had a clear path.
Right.
And he was like, who is Tyler?
He never heard of that. No, he probably is like, is that like a Dutch electronic artist?
Right.
Like,
I've never and they were like, okay, we're going to sail to number one on a ship made of energy drinks.
So can I just point out another example of this? Ticket
bundle. Ticket bundle. Feels a little bit more legitimate to me, a ticket bundle.
I actually completely disagree. I think it's tied
to music, at least.
Okay, here's an example.
First of all,
A few weeks ago, Madonna comes out with her album, Madam X. It goes to number one. She has a ticket bundle. She's doing this theater tour. She's doing 17 shows at BAM in Brooklyn. First week, she goes to number one.
Mm-hmm.
Second week, it's number 77.
Because the ticket bundle goes away.
Ticket bundle goes away.
Right.
Third week, gone. It's not charting anymore.
Appropriately.
Right?
Meanwhile, like every album Drake has ever released is still on the Billboard 200, just for perspective.
So to your question of legitimacy, like how could that possibly be justified? I mean, that showed us that like truly nobody wants to hear this record.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why putting it on an album chart. Yeah, sorry, Karen. I mean, honestly, I feel like Karen this might retroactively cut this entire segment. But that's the thing. What that is gauging is interest in Madonna's tours. It is not gauging interest. The album is purely a pretext. And she is, in essence, in the same way that you two shoved an album into our iTunes, Madonna is just shoving an album or the idea of an album into the pockets of people who want to see her on the tour.
When they go to the tour, they're going to have to hear some songs from Madam X.
Do we even know if that's true?
I guarantee it.
I don't know. I feel like that's like 50-50 at best.
And earlier this year, the Backstreet Boys.
Same thing.
Went to number one. And they're on their like fifth comeback album now.
Yeah, that album's kind of a slapper, though.
Last year, Bon Jovi went to number one with the album that had come out a year before because they went out on tour.
You're not interested in my call for a non-album-based chart that somehow captures?
I just don't think it's possible. I just don't think you get anyone to care about it.
But what if we arrive at a place where Taylor doesn't release one album every 2 years, but she releases an EP every 6 months, then what chart is going to capture that? You need a different chart setup.
I think there's too many charts already. I don't think there's room for another one. So they're just going to keep cramming what they got into the ones people pay attention to.
I do like the idea that the chart is at least supposed to measure like people's consumption of music. There are clicks, there's merch,
sure.
There's tickets, whatever, but like in one way or another, the chart is supposed to tell you like what people are listening to.
That I'm totally
And eventually
fine
they're
with that.
Gonna get rid of the merch bundles, they're gonna get rid of the ticket bundles. This is a prediction. And then it's gonna be back to sales and streams and downloads.
I may wind up eating that. Who knows? I mean, maybe merch bundles are the future. Maybe
keeping
that's
the music
it.
Music industry alive.
Well, I do think it's keeping the music. I mean, the same way that merch kept artists on the road who are not making any money off their music, kept them alive. Like, I do think merch bundles. I mean, like Travis Scott, a guy like Travis is like primarily in the product business.
Yeah.
More than
live show as an event, not as a musical.
Right. He's in the event business and he is in the product business as much as, if not more so, than he is in the music business.
Which is why I think that the chart works fine. It's just that it being called the album chart that we're taking issue with.
Absolutely. And I would hope that if the people at Billboard are listening to this, and we know you are, that you would reconsider how you are approaching your central chart narrative.
I think for people who care about charts and data and ranking music, this is a golden age. Like, you can find much fun information. Like, for anyone who's listened this far in the podcast, I'll say, like, my favorite charts are, like, the regional Shazam charts.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
Like, regional Shazam
you can
is great.
Pick a city and see Amazing. What the most Shazam songs are in that city.
Tremendous.
And that's the best way to predict a hit.
Absolutely.
Like, if you see songs taking off regionally. Like, and that means somebody hears it in a restaurant, in a coffee shop. They pull out their phone.
It's in the club. Press no one's Shazam. Checking in the goddamn coffee shop.
If you're Shazamming in the club, you're scaring the host. Pardon my... That's a meme. Pardon my French, but please don't Shazam in the club. Write down a lyric and Google it later. They pull it out, they press the Shazam button, they press it again because it doesn't work the first time. You know what I mean? That's dedication. That's how you show people really care about a song.
Yeah, I agree.
Can I tell you what I just Shazammed?
Yeah, everybody read their last Shazam and then we'll go out.
Mine? Target early this morning.
Yeah, what was it?
That's what
Love,
I'm talking about.
Love So Soft by Kelly Clarkson.
Wow, okay.
A recent Kelly
Clarkson. It was in
Shout
Target.
Shout out to Karen Gans.
Real Gans core there.
She sounded good on that song, too. That's why I listened.
Yeah.
That's why I
Shazam. Video less comfortable. Not that you would have ever known that. Joe, last Shazam. Come on.
There's a story behind this. Bastille, quarter past midnight.
It's
for a piece.
No, but that's a good Shazam song because it's like the type of song that you would hear in a lot of places, but like given to what we normally listen to, would not ever be a song we would have encountered like organically front facing. Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing is Shazamming a song multiple times.
Oh, of course.
There's a lot of hate Shazamming, right?
Yes.
Like, what is this song? I never want to hear this thing again.
I have something that's sort of in between love Shazamming and hate Shazamming is my most recent one. This was just literally like 2 hours ago. Truth by Seether.
Wow. Whoa.
Which I Shazammed because I thought it was a Nickelback song. Wow. And I was kind of like...
Shots or compliments?
Compliments. Absolutely compliments. And I was kind of like, oh, it's a Nickelback song that I'm not really up on. But it turned out it was a Seether song.
From what year?
That's a great question. I don't know. It looks judging by the picture, it seems recent. Let's see.
You recognize Seether album covers?
No, I can say they look older.
Wait, so you were walking around and went, oh, hey.
Oh, no.
It's a Godsmack album I don't
2005.
Know.
2005. It's 05.
Wow.
Yeah.
The golden age of Seether.
Yeah, Seether. Seether's really in its bag in 2005. Since I know that there's a real hankering out there, I think we should all listen to Truth by Seether, a great unheard Nickelback song. I'm sorry, it's nonsense.
It's all nonsense.
All of this is nonsense.
But SoundScan was nonsense.
How is that?
People hearing a song on the radio, buying a CD, never listening to it again. Nonsense.
I'm not okay.
But it was money spent.
But the chart in that era captured sales. That was it. It was not a complicated proposition. Did people buy the record?
But it was estimated.
No, but here's the rest. But basically the question is, were people curious, interested, or fanatical enough to go and spend $10, $12, $18, whatever it is? It's a yes or no proposition. And that is something that you can measure equally across genres. You know, it makes sense week to week.
Yeah.
None of this makes sense week to week. There's nothing comparable about what Bon Jovi did to what Travis does, to what BTS has done. None of that is comparable one-to-one. So why do you have a chart that measures it as if it's all comparable?
What charts are working?
Charts that are narrowcast.
Song charts.
Song charts. I would say the SoundCloud chart, but basically once major labels caught on SoundCloud, they wrecked it for everybody.
Yeah, the problem with SoundCloud charts lately is that they're stagnant.
Well, they were interesting before. They were kind of like jamming NBA YoungBoy songs onto SoundCloud. Like when it was like in 2016, when it was an accurate kind of like, hey, a weirdo thing is trickling up. That's interesting. I'm sure, like, the Beatport. Does Beatport still exist?
It does.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the Beatport chart.
What's on the SoundCloud chart right now? For some reason, charts are only available on desktop browsers. SoundCloud is telling me.
I'm just giving a real fizz face to the SoundCloud chart. Let's see. SoundCloud chart 50. SoundCloud top 50. Let's load this bad boy up.
Lil Tecca, I'm guessing.
Here we go. Ah, some hits. Some hits on here. Number one, Lil Tecca. Number two, Shug.
It's a real hit.
Industry plant. Number three, Shotta Flow remix. NLE Choppa and Blueface. Let's listen to that. Can we listen to the part of the Shotta Flow remix where NLE Choppa first gives way to Blueface? Number four, Juice WRLD, Run.
Sure. It's a Juice WRLD song.
Number five, Panini.
Really?
Lil Nas X,
follow-up. He's number five on SoundCloud?
Wow. The man is so unstoppable.
So there's a lot of Lil Tecca on SoundCloud. Sanguine Paradise is on here. There's some industry plants on here.
It's all rap.
Yeah, Post Malone. Your man MJ is on here. Tough, culturally insensitive song right there. Cowboys on here, Polo G, The London, more Polo G.
Rap music.
Yeah, I do not think that they're, wow, Murder on My Mind.
Not a surprise though, right?
I mean,
No. But like, this is like, if you filter out the kind of like Interscope and Republic on here.
The major label songs.
Yeah, like there's like an interesting.
Although all songs are major label songs.
No, of course. Of course. Like literally every rapper that you like who has one song on SoundCloud is signed. They're all signed. It's like, it's so funny because there used to be a point where that was not true and people were genuinely not signed. And now literally every human being is signed.
If you're an unsigned rapper,
you're not a rapper.
Get a job.
Yeah, if you're an unsigned rapper, you're actually not a rapper. You're a hobbyist.
Wow.
It's a weird moment.
You collect trains. Like you're basically like a train collector, is what you are. Yeah, the only non-rap song that I can see is that Ali Gotti song.
Ali Gotti, I told you.
You told me. You did tell me. You definitely did tell me. Yeah, this feels reflective of...
a certain audience.
Yes. And like
SoundCloud
this,
audience.
This tells me a story, and it's isolated, and it's weird, and it's kind of like cloistered off, but it tells me a story. In the same way I'm sure like the Beatport chart would tell me a story. But, like, those charts are interesting to me. And also, I'm broadly speaking, like, to Ben's point earlier, there is value in this kind of big tent. Like, hey, here's all the stuff that's happening. And you said even before, when you look at Billboard Week to Week, it kind of does tell you true-ish things about what's happening about the music. But what I'm struggling with is that it does not feel the album rubric is no longer holding.
I agree, but I think that what we see in, for instance, that Sicko Mode stat that we just went through is there aren't a lot of people listening to a lot of full albums.
But that's fine. That means the charts should be much more volatile than they are. And also, like, Billboard introduced, was it the artist chart?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about the artist chart because I do think a lot of this energy. I mean, Ben's rolling his eyes.
You don't care about the artist.
No. I'm curious about. It from a functional perspective because what I think is all this energy when Travis sells $7 million or $12 million in merchandise, when Taylor sells $30 million in merchandise or whatever it is. That tells me something. And I'm like, well, okay, how's that measured? It certainly shouldn't be measured under the album chart, but maybe there's another kind of chart that could exist that could take into account songs streamed, albums purchased, merchandise sold, tickets bought. All of these things happening at the same time weighted in an interesting way to give me a genuine glimpse into what's happening in pop.
But this is the paradox of it, that like, in a way, we're awash in data of all kinds. There was a time when, like, you needed a chart because you really didn't know whether it was being played on the radio, whether people were buying it, what, you know, whatever. You needed a chart to actually collect the data. Now you have access to all the data. You can see the SoundCloud chart. You can see the YouTube plays. You can see the Instagram follows, whatever. But what that tells you is just kind of like 40 different stories about different audiences. And they're interesting on them on their own, but it kind of cries out for some unifying measurement to say, like, put it all together somehow. I mean, maybe the album rubric is outdated. I feel like it's still the best brand branding envelope that there is.
I don't disagree that as a sort of category, I agree. It's because ultimately what the album is a proxy for in this particular case is an era. It's this era of
which
Taylor.
Is another Stan favorite, to now talk about artists in eras, not on this album or on that album or this single or that single, but distinct eras.
Right. And I think the album has become a proxy for the era.
Right.
So theoretically, all of the Taylor interest that accrued during this era is captured somewhere in that album number. All of the Ed Sheeran, I'm looking at the Artist 100 right now. Ed Sheeran is number one. All of the Ed Sheeran interest in this era is accruing there.
Even with that, it's just, it's all so gameable, right? In this fake news era of the internet, frankly, like, I'm sure it's checking things like Twitter mentions, you know, and you can just hire a bunch of bots to tweet your name over and over again, you know, as the great poet J. Cole once said, a lot of people faking their streams, you know?
Are you telling me that Lauren Daigle should not be at number 34 on the artist chart?
Look, I don't know how
Lauren Daigle's accusing Lauren Daigle of buying Twitter mentions? Just say it. Just speak it if that's the case.
I would never speak ill.
Nor should you. Lauren Daigle, voice of an angel. Voice of an angel. Should we go out with a Lauren Daigle song? A song by Lauren Daigle who is definitely not buying her streams?
Lauren Daigle sells a lot of albums.
That's what I'm saying. Just hits. She produces hits. All right, let's listen to You Say by Lauren Daigle, an artist who is untainted by any of the games that we have mentioned to this point.
I'm not sure I want to be on record with that. I don't know.
We haven't looked into it.
I'm sure she's got lots of people around her that know what to do.
That's fine. Ben doesn't agree with me, but we can still listen to Lauren Daigle and think of a kinder time in pop music.
I keep fighting voices in my mind that say I'm not enough. Every single lie that tells me I will never measure up.
That is our show on my chart. There's a tie for number one. Ben Cesario and Joe Coscarelli, thanks for being here. It's, I don't know what your merch bundles are like.
What would I sell as my merch?
I know that's your question. What would you sell as your merch bundle? I know what you would sell.
What?
All black shoes.
There you go.
Yeah.
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 Plain black shoe.
Yeah. Just
low
like,
top.
Yeah. Ben, what would you sell as your merch bundle?
Whatever's the most, like, ridiculous expensive vinyl thing. It would be like the
Vinyl
translucent
shelf, or like an acoustic, so not like the player or the
no it'd be the thing where actual, like there's a hologram that comes out of it and it's transparent flecked
with a free download
like one of the card, like a blow card that just like you do lose it immediately the minute you open up the vinyl. You're like, oh, is that even in there?
And the download card's on the outside, so you don't have to rip the plastic, so you can just flip it online.
Wow, a real head.
Yeah, true story. What would my merch bundle be? Sneaker storage?
Combs.
Storage units.
Vintage t-shirts. Storage unit.
Everyone who buys my album gets a free storage unit.
Whoa.
You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Okay, I have a feeling we're going to hear from some Stan armies on this episode.
They don't listen to podcasts.
That's true, but if you made it this
far... They don't
far,
listen to the whole thing.
No, they definitely don't. It'll be just selectively edited. So for you, email us at podcast@nytimes.com and tell us if you think that merch bundles should be captured on the album chart, or perhaps there should just be a merch chart. And subscribe to the podcast everywhere you get your audio content, be that Stitcher or the podcast app or Google Play or iHeartRadio. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstuff for Media, and we will be back next week.